All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, there's an old saying that goes, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Seven people, including two officers, injured after police chase ends in two crashes near Tetonian Capitol in the city of Milwaukee on last evening. Now, I don't know, maybe it was about two weeks ago, I was talking about chases, police chases, and inherent danger that happens to innocent people who just through no fault of their own, through the luck of the draw, just trying to get by, just trying to live their lives, trying to get home from work or pick up their child from school or go to a grocery store. Any of us. This could be any of us. And yet, on yesterday, there's a car driving recklessly without a license plate. Milwaukee police began the chase. 5 o'clock in the afternoon. In just one of the busiest sections of our community. One of the busiest. And again, most densely populated. And so law enforcement takes off after him. Now, we talked about this before. They took off after him. And what did he do? Well, he ran into an innocent car. The carnage from two law enforcement vehicles that really were almost destroyed. An innocent person standing around is in critical condition. What did the person do? Well, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, just like the last time when an innocent woman got killed because, again, law enforcement decided to chase in broad daylight. Again, none of this ever ends because it can happen again tonight. It will never end until policies are changed again. Common sense is not going to come into play. And so common sense is going to say we can't chase these lunatics. Because sometimes I don't know who the lunatic is. If it's the person that they're chasing, or if it's law enforcement that's chasing through red lights, knowing the inherent dangers at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in a city, a heavily populated area. I mean, they gotta know that, hey, this could not end well. What's wrong with phoning ahead? Well, you know, the car didn't have any plate on it. The guy might have gotten away. Well, I'd prefer that the guy gets away than innocent people get hurt and killed. Am I wrong in that assessment? Do you have to get the guy at all costs? Well, what did he do? Well, he stole a car. He had a stolen car. Okay. It's a car. It's a stolen vehicle. It's a thing. I'm not supporting people stealing cars. I'm not. But the issue is how we handle that. It's not worth somebody else's life being put in jeopardy. It's just not. My car is sitting out here right now. If somebody stole my car and took off with it, I'm insured. I'm not going to have, you know, a fit. Well, you know, somebody stole a car. We got to get him, Joe. You know, well, what do you do? Hey, he stole a car. Okay. But that shouldn't end in innocent people losing their lives. How does that add up? You know, how is that the right thing to do? Again, 7 people injured. You know, 5 vehicles. Because some lunatic, some fool, some criminal stole a car and is driving recklessly. And it's not like I don't understand that this is an epidemic. This is an issue. 19 years old. He's got 2 other fools in the car with him. Look, I talk to young people about stolen cars. I do. And I always point out to them, just like the other 2 lunatics who were in the car with this fool. So the guy that's driving the vehicle, you know, and I'm sitting in the car with somebody who's driving a vehicle with no license plate on it, who's driving recklessly, I'm telling the guy to pull over and let me out. First off, if I know that the car doesn't have a license plate on it, I'm not getting in it in the first place. So I talk to young children about that, the decisions they make. But for heaven's sakes, to get in a car with somebody who you know is not his car, and you think that's somehow fun, you're putting your life into his hands. He's the driver. You don't have any control whatsoever of what that guy's going to do. You don't. And so those other 2 guys who were in the car with him, as the car then struck the other innocent people who are now in the hospital, what does it say about those, you know, rocket scientists? Well, so who's in control of their lives? They're certainly not. When the police start chasing, what can they do? Nothing. They're at the mercy of the fool that's driving the stolen car. Let's go to the phone lines. Who do we have on the line?
David from San Francisco.
Hey, David, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Oh, thanks, Phil. You know, that same issue is going on out here, and I don't understand where these kids are coming up with enough gasoline money to pay for joyriding time. It must be a trend nationwide.
It is a trend nationwide.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense. Who's dreaming up a stupid hobby of, you know, hot rodding through the night? I kind of wonder in the long run if it's more of a... did you ever read the Naomi Klein book, Shock Doctrine?
No.
Well, it had to do with being able to create distressed zones or distressed areas. Like Donald Trump was able to buy up parts of Manhattan at $1 an acre because it was declared blighted, distressed area, right? And so if these kids are coming up with some midnight money to go hot rodding through the night, are they being paid to do it?
No, so let me say this to you, sir. One of the things that I do is talk with children in our community who are doing this. And so some of them 10 to 14 years old. And so they're doing it, many of them, because it's fun. You know, people have stolen cars forever. Even in my generation, there were people who stole cars. So, you know, that in itself is not new or unusual. What is new and unusual is the fact that they've learned how to steal cars on the internet. It's absolutely just unbelievable that children can go on the internet and it shows them how to steal cars. How does that make any sense?
You mean they're hacking the cars without a key?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that is a little odd. And, you know, then the car companies should have a, you know, they should be
Listen. Yeah. As far as them stealing the vehicles, no way I'm supporting that. But my main issue is, what sense does it make to have police chase these vehicles in broad daylight and endanger innocent people?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm calling you from San Francisco in the middle of the night, usually starting at 1 o'clock to 5 or something like that. You just hear them racing all through the town, and it's crazy. And you're right about the police chases of them, because quite often the cop car gets wrecked or the, you know.
I'm talking about innocent people.
Right, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and this has been going on for, that part has been discussed for years. You remember when Los Angeles started doing the helicopter tracking of
right,
the cars?
Right.
They actually had to stop the police because they were ending up on, you know, it was as if the cops got to be on TV too. And it got to be a big game. In fact, I think, didn't the Rodney King thing? Rodney King, when you saw those photographs of four cops beating him, they didn't pull back with the camera to show that there were actually 21 cops there.
Yeah.
And that the cops couldn't be afraid because there were 21 of them.
And so listen. I wish I had more time, but we've got to go to a break. Thank you very much for the call.
Sure. 844-967-2789.
What do you say? We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, I just don't understand in law enforcement's point in all of this. I go back to Milwaukee and the decisions that were made prior. Chief of police thought that it was too dangerous to have these chases. I don't know what happens in the towns or cities where you live, those of you in the listening audience, or what your views are. If you think it makes sense to endanger innocent people in order to get the collar. But the collar can never be worth the safety of innocent citizens. Police are sworn to protect, law enforcement is sworn to protect the citizenry. And you certainly don't do that when you're trying to catch the guy, you know. And I know I'm not naive. There's no license plate on the car. And I'm sure police are concerned that at some point in time, the guys are going to pull over and jump out of the car, and they will lose the collar. But that can't ever be more important that they lose that person than endangering my life or your life or anybody else's life. Who do we have on the line, Sam?
L.A. Tom's back.
All right, L.A. Tom, what's happening?
Hey, Earl, first off, we the people are the government. And second, the Republicans are the party of death. It's very simple. It's called chase porn or car porn. The media companies are trying to do whatever they can to redo OJ in the chase because that was their best ratings ever. And they get ratings on the TV. They don't care about if a human being dies or not. All they care about is that they got people watching the TV and getting their eyeballs.
Yes,
on the TV.
So Tom, I do understand the media's part in this, but it's law enforcement that's doing the chase.
Well, exactly, and the thing is, they're probably also involved in some type of funding that they're getting from the media. I mean, it's follow the money, I guess, is the best thing to do because that's probably what's happening, and it also makes them into celebrities, like on Cops and, you know, all of these types of shows. I mean, it's it's a sick, sick world we live in. You know, we really do value money and the love of money and the greed
of
money.
Well, like I said, again, no time. You know, if somebody steals my car, so, you know, what am I going to do, man? You know, I mean, yeah.
Again, I don't understand why it is that people aren't doing what they used to do on some of the TV shows where they would, you know, shoot out a tire, or they would basically, you know, take one of those helicopters. They probably can pick them up right off the ground if they wanted to. If they really wanted to end that thing, they could. But they don't. They love the ratings.
So my point is, you know, if the person they're chasing, and I don't even think at this point, has murdered somebody.
No.
You know, then, and we got to get this guy. He just murdered somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But well, he's driving recklessly, and he doesn't have a license plate. So we got to get him, you know.
They love the car chase. That's it. Because the thing is, honestly, if you really wanted to, you could actually have cops going from the other direction if you wanted to stop a vehicle as well. There's solutions. But the thing is, they love chase porn. They love it. They love the fact, and I don't know what it is in human beings. Whenever I see a car chase, I turn the TV off immediately. I don't even try to buy into any of that stuff because apparently someone's giving them the ratings. And I hate to say it, but it's probably
the same
people that love death.
So here's the outcome of that chase. Two squad cars destroyed. You know, taxpayer-owned squad cars, they got to be replaced.
Yep.
You know, innocent people in the other vehicle, in the hospital, in not the greatest condition. An innocent guy standing on the street in critical condition, you know, not knowing whether or not he's going to make it. If you add all those things up,
yep.
Was it worth getting a guy for a stolen car?
Hell no. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Come on.
They love it. And, you know, if a politician came out and actually said we want this to stop, believe me, that person would be probably sought on as the worst politician in the world.
Tom,
they come down with commercials.
It was politicians. It was politicians who changed the law a year ago. Okay, so we had the law in place that they couldn't chase.
And you know what? And
law enforcement said that the bad guys were thumbing their nose at them.
Yep.
Excuse me, driving by law enforcement saying, look, we know you can't chase. And that was pissing off law enforcement because they felt like it was being disrespectful to them. This is true, man. I'm not fabricating this. And so because of that, politricksters then changed the law back and allowed these chases. Now one of them will take responsibility for all the carnage that has happened afterwards.
Earl, again, the media companies are going to make big dollars on the advertising that comes in. It's all about money and politics. It's all about getting donations. It's all about getting yourself self-enriched. And the thing is, if they can get the media companies behind, you know, the politrickster and getting them buying ads on their TV networks or getting the ratings, that's what this is all about. I'm telling you, it's the same thing with a lot of the things that you're seeing, is that, you know, this gets ratings. Hurricanes. Oh, my God. Hurricane porn. Weather porn. You know, people have to see that.
Hey,
you know, people have to see anytime there's a car crash on the road. I mean, it's, you know, it's just the way human beings are, unfortunately.
All right, Tom. Thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much for the call. We've got to go to a break when we come back. Oh, okay. So we got a couple minutes. But I just know that this is not the end of it, okay? It's got to be rethought. There has to be another conversation about it. You know, they passed the law a year ago. Let's look at the sheer numbers of people who've been either killed or injured because of these chases. let's see what that is. We certainly have to get to that point. Listen, we've got to go to a break. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to go to a break. So when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I'm welcoming my next guest, Miss Arnita Holloman. Did I butcher your name?
No, you said it perfectly.
Okay. Who is, are you the, you're the executive director?
Director of the City of Milwaukee.
Yeah, Director of the City of Milwaukee Office of Violence Prevention. Good morning to you, and thank you very much for agreeing to, you know, this conversation.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
All right, so for those of you in the listening audience who have no idea what the Office of Violence Prevention is in the City of Milwaukee, can you give a brief synopsis of just what that is?
Sure. So the Office of Violence Prevention is a part of the city's health department, and we take a public health approach to addressing violence. So understanding that violence is a disease, and so while it can be transmitted, it also can be prevented. And so our work is to prevent violence, and we focus on a number of content areas, so community violence or gun violence, and that's primarily the Well, I'll go back to that, but community and gun violence prevention, there's the suicide prevention piece, family violence prevention, which includes domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, the youth engagement piece, and then the RECAST, which is resiliency in communities after stress and trauma. That's the name of that federal grant that we have, and that focuses on the mental health resilience promotion and trauma prevention piece of our work.
So for those of us who are long of tooth, who've been around a while, we remember a time when violence wasn't, or murdering, gun violence was the exception, not the rule in this city. And we remember in this city when it was one of the safest places in the entire nation for black people to live. And if you talk to a group of my generation, you know, we're now late 60s, and you asked us when we were, you know, in eighth grade, if we knew anybody who had been shot, if one person would have raised their hands, we would look at that person in disbelief. Now, when I have that conversation with a group of eighth graders, almost all of them raise their hands. So this is a kind of a new phenomena with over the last 20 years with all of these murders by guns. What's created that?
Well, I think there isn't one specific answer to that. I think there's been a lot that's changed in our city over the last 20 or more years. When you see changes in family sustaining income, when folks have poor access to or less access, barriers to quality, education, healthcare, all of those things, those are root causes for violence. When you see areas that are, we see concentrated levels of poverty, you're going to see higher rates of crime and violence. And so much has changed in our city over that time period that contributes to the rise that we see in violence. And so some of that is, some of it is, poverty. Some of it is political. But at the end of the day, we definitely know that what we see is an outgrowth of all of the things happening within our city and not one specific issue.
I know it's not one specific issue, and I didn't think or expect you to answer it as if there was an answer, because it is a confluence of things. But for, where we are right now, all over the nation, crime has increased, and especially here in this city, especially with gun crime. The easy accessibility to guns, what role does that play?
I believe it absolutely plays a role. I mean, right now there's a lot of conversation around, putting pressure on legislators to enact sensible gun laws. So, universal background checks, red flag laws. And the more, easy access that people have to firearms, it definitely contributes as well. And so not just that, but also, the straw purchases. So that's somebody purchasing a gun for somebody else who probably can't legally purchase a gun. Again, having those universal background checks is going to make a difference in that. With the pandemic, we saw a rise in gun sales. So there was a significant rise in gun sales during, the pandemic, and especially during the, that stay at home period. And so some of that is driven by fear and the perceptions of what might happen. But then again, whenever there's easy access, there is more, risk or higher probability that people are going to have guns and use them.
So that people's fear many times is that this violence is directed at, not at an individual, it's any of us, and that all of us should be terrified for our lives. But that's not the case. Many these shootings occur from people who know one another. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right, Earl. Oftentimes, it's people that know each other and have been involved in some kind of conflict, disagreement, something that has escalated and risen to the place where they're using, guns to try to solve problems or end problems, which only creates more problems and trauma and all of those things. So, yeah, most of the gun violence that we see is between people who know each other, have had some interactions with each other. It is not, for the most part, where people are just shooting random people in the street.
And that's, I think, a message that goes unheard. As I move around this city and talk with especially older people and others who fear around every corner that somebody is going to be waiting with a gun for them. So as you guys, the Interrupters, let's talk a little bit about that group that's a part of violence prevention, a group of people who actually go around in hot areas and talk to people who before something happens. Let's talk about the Interrupters.
Absolutely. Before talking about the 414 Life team, I'll just add to your point around this narrative that Milwaukee is completely an unsafe place. And, some of that is driven by media and what we, what we hear and, how we access this information. And unfortunately, in, cities like Milwaukee and urban cities, we often hear more of what's not happening or what's wrong with the city versus all of the great things that are also happening and more often than not outweigh some of the other things that are happening. So that's all about narrative too. But then to the 414 Life team. So 414 Life is a program of the Office of Violence Prevention. However, it is not housed within OVP. It is implemented by a partner in the community at this time. It's at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So the team is employed by the Medical College of Wisconsin, and they are the implementor of the program, although it's a program of OVP. And so this consists of, so they're all kind of trained in violence interruption, but it consists of violence interrupters, outreach workers, and hospital responders. And so more specifically, the violence interrupters are working to mediate conflict and to stop retaliatory violence. So when someone is shot, there is a possibility that, you know, there might be some retaliation or there's been some kind of disagreement or conflict and there's possibility of retaliation, then they will intervene and try to work with the individuals involved or both sides to mediate and to stop, you know, any additional shootings before they happen.
So how are they notified? How do they know about conflict, the conflict that is happening? Is there a number that people call and then they show up, or is just things that they hear through the grapevine?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there are a number of ways that they learn about this information. So one, not all of the team, but some of the team members have, you know, for many of them, they have been on the other side of things. So they've been the folks that have been in the community at one point in their lives, kind of wreaking some of this havoc and been a part of street organizations. And so they know kind of intimately kind of how these things happen. But not just that, they have the credibility and the influence in the community, in the streets. And so they know folks, and they're able, because they have the credibility and influence, they're able to get information, and people will reach out to them, you know, directly to let them know about something that's going on. Also, you know, people may call. Community members can also call if there's a conflict brewing that may result in gun violence. They can call and request, you know, or give them the information and request some assistance there. But the main thing is that they are able to both connect with folks who may be involved because of their credibility and influence, and then to stop those things from happening before they happen or intervene so that there isn't further gun violence. And so, again, multiple ways. Sometimes they're hearing it from the street. They're hearing it from other people they know, other organizations, or community members may even call and ask for assistance.
You know, I don't have to tell you the aftermath of all of this terror in our neighborhoods and in our communities to families. You even got people who interact and talk with them, right?
Yeah, so there are outreach workers that are out on the, you know, ground every day, you know, in the target areas, connecting with community members, neighbors, business owners. But then there's also Tania, who's the hospital responder, and they're in the process of hiring four additional hospital responders. But when someone is shot, she gets a page, so from Frater, so that's a collaboration between OVP, Frater, and the Medical College, but she'll get a page when someone's shot, and she works directly with that victim if possible and their family, but also listening in to just get a gauge if there is potential for retaliation, and she'll engage the rest of the team in that. And so she's helping them, helping that survivor through the process. And so some of that is connecting them to resources in the community to help with their healing process, and some of it may be advocating for them right there in the hospital. And so there are a number of ways that the team does some follow-up kind of connection with survivors to help them through the process.
So can you hang on a second? We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. I'm joined by Ms. Arnetta Holloman, and she is the director of the city's Office of Violence Prevention. We'll be right back.
When the rain washes.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, the City of Milwaukee's Office of Violence Prevention's own Ms. Arnetta Holloman, who is the director of the Office of Violence Prevention. So let's talk just about how overwhelming this is, because there are people who will say we need more law enforcement, and law enforcement is the answer. We've got to have police on every corner, and that's where the resources should be. What would you say to people who make that kind of a statement?
Yeah, so it's Arnetta.
Arnetta, I'm sorry.
No problem. So our work is not in opposition to the police. I think that what folks need to understand is that it has to be a multifaceted approach. And so it's not just, and when we think about public safety, we also have to include prevention in that. And so it has to be, you know, so of course they're police and they have their role and they do their job, but OVP and 414 Life and other agencies like the Credible Messenger agencies in partnership, in that collaboration with Milwaukee County, all of those things, in addition to all of the other system partners and folks, that all of this is a part of both preventing, intervening, and that postvention or that work that happens after something has happened. All of those pieces are extremely critical. And so we hear kind of a couple of things. One, well, there should be more police, but really we need to also heavily focus on the prevention aspect. And historically, violence prevention has never been adequately resourced or built up in terms of the capacity that's needed to see the kind of long-term impact that people have an expectation to see. And so that is another important piece of that. I wanted to circle back, if it's okay, for a moment.
Absolutely.
Because you asked about impact of the gun violence. And so we know that when someone is shot, whether it's fatal or non-fatal, but also even if it's just hearing gunshots, the impact of gun violence is pervasive and it's long lasting. I was speaking with someone yesterday who heard someone being, you know, heard the shooting outside of her home. I believe someone was shot in her area, but heard the shooting outside of her home. And she talked about how she wanted to do some things, to do some self-care, to take care of herself and kind of calm herself down. But she was nervous about where in her home she could do it. So she's contemplating in her head, I don't want to sit by the window, or I don't want to be in this particular area of the home, because what if there's more shooting and it comes in? These are all the things that she wasn't shot. She doesn't know the person who was shot. Long lasting, pervasive, and expansive impact of the trauma and all of that that happens. In addition to what the 414 Life team is doing, when there is a victim of gun violence, also our team will make kind of a initial connection sometimes if we are aware or there's a referral made to help get them connected to grief or emotional support. And Simone Kilgore in our office, the recast manager, does a phenomenal job of connecting with folks. And because she has a background in mental health and she's a licensed therapist, trauma therapist, she's not doing the therapy, but she's able to kind of do that initial contact point and then get them connected to someone.
So let me ask you, right now is a hot button time, hot button issue with these high-powered AR-15s and massacres that have been taking place with those automatic weapons. Do you sometimes think that, as bad as that is, that somehow the people who are being slaughtered every night all across in cities like ours, all across the nation, that's not talked about enough? Handguns and the impact that they have on communities and lives. It's easy to point at the AR-15, but the accessibility to handguns in our neighborhoods and communities, and the sheer numbers of people who are being slaughtered, sometimes, you know, people are just, they've grown immune to that.
Yeah, I think it's both and. I think we need to expand the conversation to not just around, you know, assault rifles or military style, you know, guns. But also, like you said, the handguns. I don't know why any person, any civilian would need an assault rifle. I'm not sure why any civilian would need, you know, an extended clip or extended magazine, like in a handgun. Like, what is the purpose of that? What is the intent for that use? And why are these things so easily acceptable? And while, you know, we know that, and it makes perfect sense, right? If people have a gun, they are more on their person, they are more likely to use it because they have easy access to it. And so in situations where people are in a conflict or something is happening and they have a gun on them, they are going to be more likely to use it, which means more people get shot or harmed, whether someone is shot or not. Once that handgun is fired, you can't unfire it. And so the conversation has to also expand that right now there is a very warranted outrage around legislation for, you know, around gun policy, especially after the mass shootings in Buffalo, which was a hate, you know, attack, the mass shooting in Uvalde. So Buffalo, 10 people killed in the grocery store. In Uvalde, Texas, 19 children and 2 adults killed in a school. Then Philadelphia, I think, over the weekend, where there was a large number of people that were killed. These things bring about the national attention, but people are getting killed in our streets every single day. And even with that, there were 17, 18 people in the mass shooting that happened on Water Street in Milwaukee. That didn't garner the national attention because no one was killed. And that's my assumption, that it didn't because no one was killed. But at the end of the day, that 17, 18, and when you look at all the folks that were shot downtown, 21, plus all the people shot across the rest of the city that day, you were close to like 29, almost 30 people that were shot in that particular day. Those people and those families, and some of those people did die, but they weren't downtown. But those people and those families are severely, like, they are impacted by that. And this happens every single day in most cities across the nation, cities like Milwaukee across the nation. And that conversation tends to be silent, or the conversation is very different, right? So then the conversation about when there's a mass shooting. And we have to address gun violence that happens every single day in our communities, and it doesn't matter where it happens, whether it happens in a business district or it happens on the block, in the hood. It does not matter. We have to have the same level of fight and fervor and perseverance around having sensible gun laws and protecting children, families, in our communities.
You know, Ms. Holloman, I wish we had more time. Certainly want to reach out to you again because, you know, you got to ask the question, how do 14-year-olds get their hands on these guns in our neighborhoods and in our communities? And that's got to be a part of the discussion, you know, because they don't go into, you know, a legalized gun dealer and buy them. They certainly don't get them from gun shows. You know, somebody is supplying them with these weapons in our neighborhoods and our communities. And we got to have that discussion. But I wish we had more time. We don't. I'll reach out to you again. Thank you very much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Thank everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow when we'll have Governor Evers on. I'll let you know what time, amongst others. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. I'll be back on tomorrow. See you later.